It is 11:30. Welcome to the statewide conversation with state officials about COVID-19. It's your opportunity to ask questions about Minnesota's response and plans during this pandemic. If you didn't get a chance to send or call in your question this week, you can email covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. I'm Heidi Holton, live from the KEXE studio on the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. We thank you for listening today. We're teaming up with community radio stations throughout the state in partnership with Ampers, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association to bring you this COVID-19 information for the state of Minnesota. Minnesota State Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan can't be with us today, but I am happy to welcome Chris Ayersman to our conversation. She is the director of the Minnesota Department of Health, Infectious Disease, Epidemiology, Prevention, and Control Division. Chris, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you. Glad to join.
Did I do okay on your title there?
Yep, it's just easier sometimes to say that I'm the director for infectious disease because the actual name of our division is kind of a mouthful.
Okay. Well, it was a really big week in news concerning COVID-19. We've got a lot of questions to get to from listeners around the state, but let's talk about some of the basics of testing for COVID-19. First, why is the country and why was Minnesota lacking in so many tests?
The reason is because, you know, unlike other situations that we've had to deal with as a state, this is a situation in which the entire globe is clamoring for the same supplies and resources. And so what would happen is that we would, you know, we needed certain supplies to actually conduct the test. And so that was a challenge because those reagents, those supplies were not available widely. Then, even as those supplies were becoming available, we discovered that we didn't have enough of the swabs that were needed to actually collect the specimen. And then there have, as people are aware, there have been challenges with having adequate personal protective equipment. And obviously the healthcare workers who are collecting specimens need that. So there were these three different pieces in the process, and we needed to have ready supplies for all of them. And we found ourselves for many weeks being in a position where we might have one piece of the puzzle, but we didn't have the other pieces that we needed. And so that is what has contributed to the challenges with testing. And over time, we've been able to get more of those pieces, and that's why we're able to, make some different recommendations related to testing now.
Okay. Let's listen to a clip from a conversation this week in the Minnesota House. The chair of the Health and Human Finance Division, Democratic Representative Tina Liebling, held an informational meeting to discuss the breakthroughs in COVID-19 testing in Minnesota. And this is what she had to say.
The main thing this is really going to do is have us work more as one system in the state of Minnesota instead of a lot of disconnected systems, sharing our capacity to do the testing, making sure we get resources where they need to go, and that everybody in the state gets tests when they need them, and that we can really share information and make sure we have the best possible response.
Can you expand on what Senator Liebling had to say, the Representative Liebling had to say?
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, one of the things that we have been seeing when we looked at where was testing happening and where could people get testing is that there were certain health systems that had greater capacity than others, Mayo being one of them. And so when we looked at our testing rates across the state, we could see that the southern part of the state had much more access to testing than other parts. And that was partly because of the access that their health systems had to some of those, the three elements that I said were needed to be able to actually test people. And so with this new system, what will happen is that we want the testing to be local, and we want health systems to be able to do as much of the testing as they can. But if they lack capacity or if they reach capacity, they can be connected to this larger state system so that they can continue to access resources from other parts of the state. So in other words, if all the marbles are in, you know, St. Cloud, and we need marbles in Moorhead, this will allow us to move marbles or lab or testing capacity so that everybody has access like they need it.
Let's talk about this. Governor Walz announced that soon it will have the capacity to test 20,000 people a day in Minnesota. Is this a new kind of test, or can you kind of explain that for us?
You know, the test that he's referring to with the 20,000 a day is, well, no, actually, I'm going to take that back. Originally, there were some numbers with 100,000 tests a day, and that was the serologic test. That was the test that would look at if someone had a history of infection. But actually, we are working to ramp up the molecular test. That's the test that is actually checking to see, are you infected right now? And so the goal is to ramp that up. And the guidance that we've put out as capacity ramps up is that we want to make sure that individuals with symptoms have the capacity to be tested.
More people have the ability to get a test now. And with that new information, what will you be able to do, or what will you be able to learn?
Well, with the information on who's infected, then we will be able to talk about, or we'll be able to work with those individuals to make sure that they're isolated, to identify who their contacts are, and make sure those individuals are isolated as well.
Okay. And once those, are you expecting the test numbers, there are going to be a lot more positive tests in Minnesota, and what should we keep in mind if we do see those numbers get bigger?
Well, one of the things that we have, you know, been saying all along is that the number of cases that we report, you know, each day from the department is absolutely just the tip of the iceberg as it relates to what's actually happening in the state. And I think that for a large portion of the state, they haven't really believed that. They've really thought that, well, it's really more in the metro, or it's more in the south part of the state. But that's not actually true. And what we're seeing is that when we do have cases that are introduced into settings like congregate care, congregate living, jails, homeless shelters, that type of thing, or some of these, what we're calling a congregate work setting, a manufacturing plant, that type of thing, we see lots of transmission. Well, that is showing it's not getting introduced. It's getting introduced because it's in the community, I guess is what I'm saying. And so we're expecting that when we do more testing, we're going to see many more cases. We'll be able to quantify the cases that up until this point we have said are out in the community, but we haven't been able to test. So when you see more cases, you should know that, you know what, that has been out there all along. We just haven't had the capacity to test.
We are talking with Chris Ehresmann from the Minnesota Department of Health in this statewide conversation about how Minnesota is coping and dealing with COVID-19. We did have a call from Emma from Minneapolis.
Hi, my name's Emma. I live in South Minneapolis, and I'm calling with a question about COVID-19 testing. I've been reading in the news that the state has just really increase their capacity for testing, and I'm wondering how the increased access to testing will look like and what, if any, effect it will have on the stay home order. All right, thank you.
Yeah, what will that look like?
Well, right now we're working to make sure that health systems have access to testing and have the capacity to do testing through their systems. But we recognize that not everyone is able to be tested in those settings, and so we'll be looking at other ways to ensure that people have access to testing, if not directly through a health system. And what difference will it make for the stay-at-home order? It'll give us the opportunity to have a better handle on exactly what's happening in the state, so we'll have a better idea of, you know, is disease continuing to increase? Are we seeing, you know, are we seeing it drop off at all? We'll feel more confident about the testing being able to give us information about what's really happening in the state, as opposed to now when we've had to be very targeted. And so we know that there's transmission, but we're only able to see it in targeted settings.
We heard from Sarah. She sent an email and she said, with the increased testing capability and given that young people were originally said not to be as susceptible to the coronavirus, why was it necessary to close schools for the remainder of the school year?
That's a good question, and that was a decision that was made by the governor's office. And so I would have to refer people to the governor's office and the Department of Education on that decision.
Okay. We had a question from Mary about seeing family. She said, can I visit my grandchildren if we have all isolated for 2 to 3 weeks and we are without COVID symptoms? And they are without COVID symptoms. We think my son and daughter-in-law may have had it, but they are a full month without symptoms now.
The recommendation, the stay-at-home order, you know, says that we have to maintain social distancing with people, and that we should focus our interactions with people in our same household, so the people that we live with all the time. Certainly, you know, people go out on the street and you take a walk and then you see neighbors and you know, can have conversations with them, maintaining distance. So certainly those types of interactions are okay. But the recommendation is that it's only within your household that you're having close contact. And then with everyone else, the recommendation is that you maintain social distancing.
We had another question from a post on social media. The question is, what do you think of the people who are protesting and demanding that our state reopen faster? What would you want them to know about what your department is facing and what you see as needing to happen before we can fully get back to business?
Well, as the governor has said, we absolutely support these individuals' right to protest. I mean, that is their right. And I understand their frustration because, you know, I too am under all of the restrictions. I happen to be at work a lot of the time, but I face the same restrictions that everyone else does. Can't get my hair cut, all those things. But this isn't about us. These are decisions that we're making collectively for the most vulnerable in our community. And I think, you know, if we think about it, we all have, you know, friends that we know that have underlying health conditions that put them at very high risk for severe consequences of COVID. We have family members, grandparents that we love that are older and are at higher risk for complications. So it's easy for us as individuals to be frustrated, but the decision that we're making as a community, as a society, is that we want to make sure that we're doing what we can to protect the most vulnerable in our community. And it gets hard, and we chafe at it, but that is our motivation, is to protect the most vulnerable.
We had a question that is about dealing with within your family with different political views. This person said, our family has members from across the political spectrum. We've been having lots of disagreements about the proper path forward right now to balance safety, not letting the whole economy go down in flames. I understand the importance of widespread testing announced this week, but can you help me understand the importance of tracking and how that affects decisions, like when to end the shelter in place order? And what is, explain what the tracking will be like.
Oh, you mean when we, what they tracing. Refer to as contact tracing?
Tracing, yes.
Yep. Yeah. So one of the reasons that testing, you know, helps us moving forward is that if everyone who has symptoms that could be consistent with COVID has the ability to be tested, we can identify if that person has COVID. We can make sure that they stay isolated, and then we can make sure that their contacts are aware of the exposure and that they will also, you know, they will quarantine themselves or stay out of circulation. And by doing that, we're able to minimize the likelihood that there will be, you know, additional transmission from those individuals. When we haven't had the capacity to test, you know, we don't know, we can't say, you know, who has COVID. Now, obviously, we've been saying for weeks and months, you know, stay home if you're sick, but people don't always do that. And so with the ability to have testing, people who are sick can be tested and find out, you know, what it is they have, and then we can address the importance of isolation with those individuals as well as with people they may have come in contact with.
All right. You mentioned already nursing homes, and we had quite a few questions having to do with that. We heard from someone who said in order to reopen the economy, the states must create a ring of steel around nursing homes and senior living arrangements. At the moment, the Minnesota Department of Health has not prioritized PPE for these facilities, as demonstrated by my wife's nursing home, which has locked up most PPE until they have their first case. And to me, that is too late.
You know, we were just discussing this. I think one thing that I want to clarify is not that we have not prioritized PPE for these facilities. We have wanted to get personal protective equipment, make it available, but we have not. We were lacking a supply of surgical masks, frankly, and so now, you know, we've had word that that has come in, and that we can start getting that out to facilities. But the challenge was not the desire to make it available, but the sheer fact that we didn't have it. So that has been a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us more about the special situation of people in nursing homes? And I know for a lot of people, if their family members are there, it's just incredibly hard. And we had Jane who was asking about changes to protocols that are being made as you learn about how this disease is affecting people and spreading. Can you just give us a more of an idea on how you're working with these facilities?
Absolutely. We are working really quite aggressively with long-term care. We started, even before there were any cases in long-term care settings, we started having, you know, calls with them and providing them, you know, with the type of information that they needed to be prepared, what the things they could do to make sure that their facility would be better able to handle a case of COVID-19. With the facilities, when a case is identified, we assign a case manager, and we work with the facility to, you know, go over, okay, who has COVID, what might exposures have been. We interview staff. We have an infection prevention team that does a virtual assessment of the facility and gives them guidelines of, you know, okay, this is what you're doing well, this is great, here's a gap, here's how you could improve things, you know, here's things you need to make sure you're implementing. So we work with the facility really closely in that way. But there are also some kind of broad overarching changes that have been made via CMS at the federal level, and that is, you know, to restrict visitors. I know that's very frustrating for family members, and I'm sure it's very frustrating for residents, but to limit visitors to facilities, because we know that COVID is brought into the facility by visitors or staff. And so by limiting visitors, that reduces the chance that we could have COVID in. There have been recommendations to not have group activities. Again, that is limiting the interaction between residents so that, you know, if somebody does have COVID, the chance that they would spread it to someone else is less. Now, the challenge in all of this, and I want to be clear that I've explained this, is that as we learn more about COVID-19, and we have been over these last 3+ months, we're learning that there is a period of time before an individual has their symptoms start in which, you know, they are or can be infectious. And so I just, for those individuals who are, you know, concerned and frustrated about all that's happening with long-term care, congregate care settings, if there is a case in a facility, I want you to know that it's not necessarily because there was a staff person who was blatantly ill who came to work, but rather we know that for a couple days before people have symptoms that they may be infectious, and so that may be the cause. But by reducing the number of people that are entering facilities, that reduces the likelihood that there would be an introduction.
Okay. We had another question from social media, and this person is confused by the amount of information that is out there and the amount of misinformation that's out there, and asked about something they saw posted that said that the coming warm weather might mean that coronavirus is less contagious.
That's actually a great question. And, you know, there are a lot of diseases that have what's called seasonality. That means we tend to see them at certain times of the year rather than others. And we've talked about the fact that with influenza, the drier air in the winter can help facilitate the spread of influenza. And so the question is, well, if we get to the summer weather, is that going to make a difference? And some of the other coronaviruses, so the family of virus that causes COVID-19, some of the other viruses do have some seasonality. But we don't know if the virus that causes COVID is going to behave in that same way. So we can't say, oh, summer's coming, that's going to make a difference. We just don't know. But there are a couple of factors that we do know that happen in the summer that are a positive thing just for disease transmission. One is that people are outside more. They have their windows open. They're not crowded together inside. So that makes a difference in terms of, you know, the possibility of disease spread. And there's some, you know, research that may suggest that, oh, our immune systems, you know, are just as happy as we are to have the warmer weather, which, you know, could play a role, sunlight, vitamin D, all those things. I think that we're going to have to wait and see if there is a true seasonality to the transmission of COVID, but I know that the warmer weather and the chance to be outside and be not in such close confined quarters is certainly a positive thing.
Do you have any advice for sources that you would recommend? Because there is so much information out there right now.
Well, certainly the Minnesota Department of Health site is a good resource. The Centers for Disease Control site is a good resource. When we think about credible resources, you know, the health department sites, the Centers for Disease Control sites, those are sites that are going to provide information that is science-based, that, you know, we're not selling anything. We don't, you know, we don't have a product. So our goal is to just provide, you know, citizens with the best information. And certainly your local health department website would be good as well. So you would like to be looking at sites that, you know, are known to be credible before COVID, and those are, you know, CDC, Department of Health, local public health sites.
We are talking to Chris Ayersman from the Minnesota Department of Health. It's our statewide conversation on Minnesota's response to COVID-19. We heard from Tom, who asked about the testing capabilities. Now that they have increased, will there be proactive testing in areas of the state that do not have documented cases of COVID-19 or don't have many?
Yes, the goal, as I had mentioned earlier, the goal is that all health systems are going to have the capacity to offer testing to individuals who are symptomatic. So if you have symptoms of COVID, the goal is that you should be able to be tested. And we'd like that to happen, you know, locally, so through your local health system. And if the system doesn't have that capacity, then they can tie into that broader network at the state level with the university and with Mayo. So yes, our hope is that across the state, people will have access to testing.
We heard from Susan, and she wanted to know, because you had talked about how you may be carrying the COVID virus before you have the symptoms. Do you see testing as eventually being done on people who are not symptomatic?
Yes, that is something that, you know, has been done in some settings and certainly has been talked about, and that is testing of asymptomatic individuals. At this point, however, you know, we're kind of in a stepwise process, and so we've had limiting testing available, and then as it's expanded, we've had to target, you know, highest risk, most vulnerable populations, and now we're moving to expand so that anyone with symptoms can be tested, and then I think as we meet that goal, then conversations about whether or not it would be appropriate to test asymptomatic individuals will happen. But at this point, with our capacity, we want to make sure that we first are able to, you know, get all those individuals who have symptoms, and then we can think about next levels.
Okay. And we have time for one more question for you. We heard from someone who asked about, they had been watching the news conference with Dr. Michael Osterholm, where he said we are still in the early innings of the game. And they said that's hard to hear. In addition to worrying about getting sick, what mental health challenges should we be on the lookout for? Is the health department also concerned about that?
Yes, that's a very fair concern and feeling. Until we have a vaccine that's available, we have to be on our guard for COVID-19, and we know that vaccine development can take a while. So definitely mental health concerns are something that is on the radar at the health department. And some of the things, you know, recommendations that we have for people are, you know, make sure that you're taking a break from the news. And so I appreciate that you're listening to this program, but, you know, make sure that not all of, you know, your intake is about COVID-19. That can be pretty overwhelming. Take care of yourself. Make sure that you're eating healthy, sleeping, getting outside. All of those things make a difference in your mental health as well. And make sure that you take time to unwind and do some things that you enjoy. I know for me, it used to be that at the end of a long week, I'd look forward to, oh, we could go out for dinner on the weekend. And obviously that's not a possibility, but there are likely other things that people enjoy doing that they can consider. And then the other thing is to make sure that you are really, you know, connecting virtually, talking on the phone, having as many connections with people as possible. I think that's the one thing that we're all realizing in this situation is that we are very social beings, and I think some of the hardest things we have to deal with are this not being able to connect in person, and so it's important that we take advantage of as many opportunities to connect virtually as we can.
It's Chris Ayersman, the Director of Infectious Disease with the Minnesota Department of Health. We thank you so much for your time today and clarification of what the state is doing concerning COVID-19. Thank you so much.
Sure. Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye. You can see lots of information about where the coronavirus is currently in Minnesota, how it's been spread at the dashboard. Look at health.state.mn.us and look for the dashboard. This broadcast, a collaboration of community radio stations throughout the state in partnership with Amper's Diverse Radio for Minnesota's communities and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. Listen to the full conversation at kaxe.org. If you'd like to ask a question next week, email COVID@ampers.org. I'm Heidi Holton for KAXE KBXE. Thanks for tuning in.